find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hey, this is Butterbean, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
What a great way to start episode 300. Yell at your cats, get them on the floor, get your dogs out of here. Guys, hello.
I'm Mike Dubba, it's episode 300. Get down and start listening to us. Oh, no, seriously, do not wreck my Lamar Arrington miniature figurine. Right?
Yeah. So, hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 300, Mike. Yay!
300!
The last ride. This is it. This is it.
And we're going to have a documentary like The Undertaker. Nice.
Yep. Last Dance, The Last Ride. And ours will be the last episode, I think. I think last episode is a good title.
We're still waiting for the first laugh.
Yeah, well, we'll get there.
Eventually. Sometime tonight.
But for those of you just tuning in, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, episode 300. We have so much planned for you tonight. It's unbelievable. The staff has been working overtime, preparing this extravaganza. Late hours, late nights, a lot of back and forth. Mike's people contacting my people. And we got the HR lady taking care of things, and the firm, the lawyers are there. So it's been a big operation. We have Bruce Valanche writing for us, you know, getting our bits all tight. So
I meant to call you. All those things you asked me to do, I didn't do. Was it important?
Oh, so that's what your people were trying. I think.
Yeah. I mean, we were going to call, but you know, it was. We didn't want to.
I also found it strange that your people were a Bigfoot guy and a guy who tried to sell you a Raiders jersey in the middle of the night. Those were your people.
Yeah. I don't know how they became my staff, but they're the most talkative. So I'm like, all right, you're part of the crew. You know, it's less stuff for me to worry about. But
so you brought
apparently the- stuff like explaining them the what we do and the work and. All that. That was part of my list of what I should have done. So that's on me.
Yeah.
We'll wait till 600.
No. This is it. And it's cool, Burlo. Like, it's cool that we have started episode 300. We've come a long way where, you know, back in the day, the world was in unrest and people didn't get along. And like chaos was happening everywhere. And now it's nice that episode 300, we find the world in a better place, a peaceful place where there's just harmonious behavior all over the country.
In country, I'm talking world. I just got an email from Al Qaeda that said, we're done. Thank you.
Oh, Al Qaeda out.
Yeah, they put hashtag Al Qaeda out, hashtag verbal shenanigans. So we know. This is what brings the communities together, us making a even number amount of episodes. That's the key.
Yeah, man. I don't know, man. It's hard to like be all jovial and, yay, like it's 300. We're so happy. Like when like the world is basically crumbling around us, you know, it's every city's on fire as we speak. And people hate each other even more on social media and in real life now. People just somehow a guy gets murdered by a cop, and you know, There's still two sides to everything.
I'm kind of curious about the reaction. So, like, one of the first protests that went a little awry was down here in Georgia,
yep,
in front of the CNN building.
Right.
So I'm kind of wondering what the conservatives were thinking. They're like, on one hand, we got them in the corner. On the other hand, we could get rid of CNN tonight.
So they burn them to the ground.
Ooh,
yep.
Which one do we root for in this scenario?
Yeah, I don't know. It's another classic case of, you know, you see what you're given, right? Like, we only have access to what we see online and on the TVs and on the news networks. And we've been trained at this point to never trust any of the news networks and to know that the news networks have an agenda, right? But then the trickle-down effect of that is to know that, you know, your super liberal friends have their agenda because they've been trained, and then your super conservative friends have their agenda because they've been trained over the years when they don't even know it. And for everything you post or that's posted, there's another thing that just is the complete opposite. So you see a post of Antifa kids dressed in black, just smashing windows, white kids everywhere, causing more chaos. And then you get the video of cops just causing all sorts of problems and pushing people. Then you get the video of the cops that are joining and being part of things. And then you get the video of the young African-American kids just looting everything. And then you get the video of the point is, it's it's once again a thing that is a everything to take you away from, like, what the actual meaning of, you know, this protest and this movement to try to really, you know, do something about police brutality and discrimination and racism has now turned into, once again, let's pick sides and let's, you know, forget everything that makes logical sense.
Well, I feel the best thing to do, whatever decision you make, make sure you get it from somebody's simplified post on Facebook or Twitter.
Right.
I feel details are unnecessary when we're talking about, you know, pretty close to race wars almost.
Pretty
you know,
much.
I mean,
yep.
People want to get too granular. I want to hear what my uncle's next door neighbor, who I met once at that barbecue, thinks about it.
The one that was shooting guns out of his with no pants on.
Yeah. I feel he's got the mentality, and he's looked at the whole situation, and he's got the experience to tell me, Mike, this is what you got to do.
Yeah, I agree. It's very important to find a voice that you trust and just stick by everything he says and never question it. That's generally a good philosophy, I think.
Yeah, and if somebody writes a big, long post, just take the first three sentences and then say, shut up, liberal.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Shut up, snowflake. but it's just worse than ever. It's everything is fake, and the president is the worst, and everybody's the worst, and it's everybody's fault. It's Obama's fault. It's Trump's fault. It's cops' fault. It's it is funny though. It is the one thing. It is fun to find out, you know, who you already had an idea, but now, like, things like this happen, and you really clarify who you follow that is completely racist. It comes out really quick.
Yeah, I feel if there's anything good, we realized today that nobody looked up how many Kobe deaths happened tonight. So yeah. that's a key thing, you know. It gave us the break. You know, I kind of wanted a vacation, but you know, the riots. All right, I mean, not getting to hear the news and all that fun stuff, and to hear everything that's wrong with both African Americans and police at the same time from every direction. I think we finally got to the point where Mother Nature is not only trying to kill us, now God is trying to kill us. And now they're teaming up. I just feel like if we go all the way up to a cloud, there's all these, like, huge deities coming together, and like, damn, I thought I got them this time. They're like, whoa, let me throw something out there to them. Let's see if I can get rid of them.
Yeah, and what's great is God and Mother Nature people will have a huge debate again. So even when you die, you will be put in an area where there's one side or the other. So you just can't get away from it.
Yeah, I'm torn between the church and the Wiccans. I don't know. I'll go back to episode 101, Witchy Woman, with my friend Martha Cameo.
That was 101. Wow. That was 101. Oh my God. You pick out your racist friends real quick when it's just like, that every post is not all cops and all lives matter, and like we know. I think you're missing something. No one's saying your life doesn't matter, or that every cop is kneeling on an innocent man, a man's neck and holding him there for 8 minutes. We know, but your people aren't being. You're not being shown. You're not being shown Burloos every weekend. Every couple months being murdered by cops. If that was what you were shown, Mike, and everyone in your family and that you lived by was being murdered every couple months, you might be a little bit angry.
Yeah, I mean, that might have been why the whole Buckaloo story in Europe and all, probably like redcoats were putting the knee on some of us Buckaloos and we're like, freak this, and we hightailed it out and split out. But, to your point, and all, it seems like the most knowledgeable people are the people who don't have any clue about what the other side's going through.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, clearly the best thing to do is not to riot, but I'm not sitting back and saying they don't have some kind of points or whatever. I will say my favorite meme is the one they put out there. It's like, why don't they... why don't people have to riot to prove a point? And then it's like the NBA players wearing the shirts that I can't breathe. No, not that. Kaepernick kneeling. No, not that.
No. It's 100% true, man. It's like, listen, it doesn't take a genius to understand that are there people who are very advantageous and just out there to maybe get some free stuff and break things and just release some of this youthful energy, or not even youthful, but you do see a lot of young people just out there. Yep. And that's, who are we or who are you to say that, when you were 19, 20 years old and you didn't really have any perspective on life and you've been locked up for 3 months or COVID and, something like this happens and everyone around you is angry, that you wouldn't be out there storming and stomping and everything. It's very easy to just cast blanket judgment, like without being like, well, I understand a little bit, but like it's really stupid. They're breaking things. Of course, it's, the people that seem like they shouldn't be there and have no reason being there, tipping cop cars and breaking things and, you're like, why destroy your own city? And then you hear everything else. It's like these people aren't, a lot of them aren't even from the cities. A lot of them are from out of state and they're from groups that are there to agitate. And again, you just don't know what to believe because you see video from somebody else, which seems pretty transparent and like, wow, the cops are doing a nice job. And then the next video, it's just, we're in a day and age where I never know what to believe, but you have to just be like, at least keep the point of this whole thing in mind.
I think if we can all agree on one thing, the dumbest thing about this whole deal is to plunder from Target. Of all the choices of stores in this world, if you're going to steal from one, you pick that one. I would like at least something with some fine residuals in there. It'd be great if like people are going in there late and they're like, there's nothing left, and they're stealing like old Mother's Day cards for their.
Well, maybe you should do that because.
No, we've been over this over text. I got that card in this year.
What next Mother's Day? You should just send like 8 in the mail and date them from like all the years you missed, and just be like, I hope this makes up for the years of missing cards.
Maybe I should just like make a deal with the U.S. Postal Service. Like, no. Say, all right, this one you deliver this year. This one you deliver next year. Just keep the forwarder address. I don't know if they're going to move. I got to make sure these go in there. I'm not going to the store for another one, all right?
So you're going to mail, instead of like postmark one, you're going to mail like ones for the future, so you're just done for like the next decade.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. But I don't know. It's another trying time in America, man. It's just we're falling apart, and it's just you can understand. Of course, you can understand many signs, but it's also, in my opinion, it's just I think I said it last week. I think I said it's time for like, especially white folks to kind of shut up, but also kind of speak up. Like let the black voices take this over, and then speak up like when you to things that are unjust and wrong, and but wait for your wait for your time, I guess. Wait for the time to be involved and the right things to do. Going out there and just breaking stuff when you're not being asked to go do that, and that's not burning down your own community, seems like not really what if I'm trying to support the black community and stop police brutality, I don't know how lighting the city on fire helps that point of view. I don't know.
I miss the simpler times when we were excited that Wendy's had a new breakfast menu. I don't know. It's so much heaviness, it seems like, every week that's coming to us, and I don't know what to really say anymore. I mean, yeah. I want to see an end, but I'm almost worried. Oh God, what's the next series going to look like?
Yeah, you know what the next thing is? November.
What's it?
Election time.
Yeah.
It is putting everything in a pressure cooker, and when Donald Trump wins in November, which I've been saying it for 3 years now, I think he's going to. Get ready, is all I'm saying. This is as bad, this feels like the low of the low, but I think the anger of people and the disagreements and the right side versus the left side is going to reach a absolute peak point. Right or wrong, Trump side or not, I think we're going to reach a peak explosion of anger in this country.
Well, Scott, if I've learned anything in this past week, apparently all I got to figure out is like the last 50,000 people who die, and I'll just mail in their ballots.
It
sounds pretty simple. I mean, I'm sure there's so easily to get a hold of these stuff. So, yeah, I'll figure out the election. Don't worry. And it's not going to be, don't worry, it's not Biden. It's Vermin Supreme. Don't worry. We're going to be better.
I just don't know where it turned to, like, I voted for Trump, or I voted for Obama or Clinton. I just don't know where it turned in time that if you vote for someone, you just have to blindly support everything they do. These are people you vote for that you've never met in your life, and let's face it, most people pay attention every 4 years and go, okay, I'll vote for this guy. He seems all right. You don't know him from a hole in the head, and you're blindly defending them. Like, I don't know. I don't understand where it turned to that point. And I really don't care, liberal, conservative, whatever you are. Like, where is the – I don't know. I put politicians in my eyes all under, like, a skeptical microscope. That's why they're politicians. I'm like, this guy. Like, yeah, maybe they do some good things and some bad things. But when did it become like, oh, my God, this is – no matter what.
Remember when you could be wrong about it? Remember when you could vote for somebody and be like, ooh, he didn't turn out as good as I wanted them to be, so that's on me. I'm not going to vote for him again.
Okay. Listen, we don't like to be all political here, but when you got the President of the United States saying when the looting starts, the shooting starts, you don't – even if you're the biggest conservative in the world, that doesn't go, oh, boy, that's going to cause some problems. Like that, you just blindly agree with that. And you find out that statement was used in like past riots and things like that. Like, you don't think that's going to bother the country just a little bit, and be like, oh man, he shouldn't have done that. Instead, you just blindly support it and start posting it. Like, I saw people reposting that who are like big Trump guys. I'm like, oh man. Like, and then they'll repost that, but then be upset when violence and other things happens the other way. Like, things are turned over and burnt. But yet they're advocating, like, oh, well, you do that, you're going to get shot. And that's okay.
Well, I mean, how close is SpaceX again to Mars? I mean, I think that's our next bet.
That's it. That's it.
That's going to be our next safe bet for, like, all right, this community, we're going to be all right. That whole last one. We messed that.
I'm thinking the opposite. Maybe we just take SpaceX, instead of taking good people, right, and like starting a new. I'm thinking like the punishment for people, instead of like taking up our prison time and all that, just send them to space.
I kind of
like that cop. Like, let's take that cop.
A bunch of people with like shotguns on the moon pointing at the Earth.
Exactly. Or let's take that cop.
Getting closer.
Let's take the cop, right? Chauvin or whatever his name is. Bad dude, made an awful mistake. Literally did something that might change the history of the country. And, you know, it's a bad dude. No one wants him here. We can all get behind. Send him the space. Send him the space. And send him with what he needs to survive and send him to some distant planet. Mars could be like, remember how Australia was built on, like, criminals and stuff like that? This is even more intense. We're going to send them to another planet.
I have to see if there's a copyright on Space Jail, because I think when the movie theaters open up, I could probably get a good, cool $200 million for that, even with the crappiest plot humanly possible.
Well, here's the plot. I mean, this is you send a bunch of criminals, Con Air style, right, to Space Jail. They get to space. They're put in prison. Clearly, you know what happens. They figure out how to riot and take over and start to build their own society and build weapons, and their whole thing is to go back to Earth and take over Earth.
But I gotta go 80s on you. We need like our lead character to be framed and have to be sent to space jail.
Yes,
and he has to come up with the diabolical plan of escaping from the moon and rectifying all the wrongs on Earth.
Yeah, and the whole thing would be like the criminals figure out a way to blow up Earth from Mars, right? Like they have some way to shoot a weapon at Mars that was initially intended to blow them up if they misbehaved, but they had some smart brainiac dude like figure out how to point it directly at Earth, and that's their goal, and he's got to figure out how to defunct that.
Yeah, okay. The evil one to blow up Earth, we're going to put Tom Hardy at that role. I think he can work with that.
I'm in.
Tom Hardy
initially makes me already want to watch the movie. Yeah. So.
See, we need some kind of comical guy there. I'm thinking, who's the comedian who was on The Office?
Steve Carell?
No. He did Hot Tub Time Machine.
What's his name? He plays the piano and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. I see him as the wise something
Robinson. Craig Robinson, right?
That goes to him. I think he can work with that.
And then I'm thinking, like, you know, the bad guys always need a cast of, kind of lunatics around them. And I think, like, a guy like Steve Buscemi reprises his role kind of like in Con Air, where he's that super weirdo. It's almost like a throwback nod to, like, oh, okay, he's kind of crazy.
Yeah, okay. I like this. And I think, like, Space Jail should have been established, like, 30 years ago, and he's been there for, like, 20. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the veteran of the group. He's a little wacky, but he knows everything about Space Jail.
Yeah. Like, no one really wants to go talk to him, but they eventually have to go sit down.
They're like, if you want this to be done, he's got to be in.
Yeah. And he was part of the Space Jail protocol, like the prototype, 20 years ago that no one really knew about. So he's been surviving on his own there for like 20 years before the new arrival of these, prisoners comes. So he's just absolutely crazy. He's a loner, and eventually they got to learn about it. But he knows how to get out of there, and since they arrived, he can now do it.
I feel we need like a famous person to do the snitch character, and the twist is when they like one of the good guys have to kill him to make sure that the heist still goes as planned.
I'm going with like another comedic voice that I think he needs a renaissance. He never gets. I think Martin Lawrence gets the nod. Ooh. There, kind of like he got Bad Boys, but I always wonder what happened to Martin. He was on top of the world comedy-wise, so this could really help him back.
I like that.
And
I
then,
like that.
And then we're going to sprinkle in like a Mickey Rourke as a rugged character that's kind of been, you know, he's a rapist and a murderer, and he's been sent, and he's kind of, he's there. He's one of the henchmen kind of guys. We'll sprinkle.
So who's our space warden?
Oh, the space warden.
I'm thinking, how about, like, I think we need an older statesman who can kind of be like an a-hole, but not like pure cheesy 80s a-hole, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that enough edge that it's believable, but not over the top.
See, I was thinking like, you know, traditional old kind of like curmudgeon, and I think Anthony Hopkins can take that role. Like, you know, he could really be the grumpy space warden that was like, you know, like maybe he was once part of the original astronauts and he kind of got like, you know, pushed out of the original group and he's just kind of sore and salty about that. So he latched onto Space Jill and he's really abusive and nasty.
I like this. I like this.
Right. So, I mean, we can write this, bro. Me and you, 50-50, Space Jill.
I think this is going to work, you know, but I think we forgot to cast our lead, our good guy that got framed.
Well, if we're going for like a real good actor, you know, I would always like Edward Norton, but he's really picky about his roles. This might be a little too cheesy for him.
Yeah, he's over the top. We'll never have enough money to put Edward Norton in space jail.
I'm thinking Thor.
Chris Hemsworth?
Yeah. He's hot right now. We need a nice masculine guy that's pretty hot and chicks, because you got to get the female audience too, which is important. And Chris Hemsworth automatically brings in a ton of females.
I kind of like that. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I also want to get that guy from Mad Men in some kind of role. Ham. We'll shoehorn him in somehow. Maybe he'll be like, well, he's pretty popular. We got a big budget saying all these names. He'll be like the lawyer that is like on Earth, like saying, you got to let this evidence in. There's so much proof he didn't do it. That way we'll get him for like five scenes and it will still add character to the movie.
I'm in. I'm totally in for Space Jail. You know, Berlo, it is episode 300, and we promised to bring the fun, the interesting, the unique, and you know, we've had I want to estimate about 400 guests on the show, which I think is pretty easy estimate. We might even be over that. We'll figure it out one day. But we've interviewed, maybe this next guy could be one of the henchmen there on Space Jail. I think he would be perfect to be one of the guys there.
He may. Now, everyone, we want you to like enjoy our show and forget about the violence. So the best way to do that is to bring in a professional fighter. And that's what we're doing. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to be talking with former WAA and IBA super heavyweight champion. You may remember him for all the four-round tough fights he was in. You may remember him from beating up Bart Gunn at WrestleMania. You may remember him as the guy who punched Johnny Knoxville around in the Jackass movie. You may remember him from K-1 and Pride Fighting Championships. You probably won't remember him from his real name, Eric Esch, but you will remember him as Butterbean.
Butterbean! We're pretty excited to get Butterbean on the line. So, episode 300. We're pretty good with having fighters as our 100. We had Gary Goodridge for 200. And he's
200,
Gary Goodridge versus Butterbean, awesome fight in their primes. Maybe we could still make that happen. But let's get the one and only Butterbean on the line.
Can you hear me?
Hey, hi.
We can hear you.
Awesome.
What's going on, man? How are you?
We're making it, man.
First off, I want to thank you, Eric, for giving us a couple minutes here on the show. We appreciate it.
From the start.
Are you sharpening a knife right now?
Do what?
What are you doing there? You sharpening a knife?
I'm sharpening a bit that trims my ink pens. I make handmade ink pens. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No.
Make them out of like anything from woolly mammoth ivory to alligator jawbones.
How does one find woolly mammoth ivory? That seems like a hard product to get.
You can find anything you want in the world.
That seems like an awesomely weird like reality show where we just send things to Butterbean and we're like try to make a bit out of it.
It's cheap. This is a Mach 3 razor. I don't think you can see it, but yeah. It's alligator jawbone with teeth in it.
Jeez.
Now, I got to ask you, when were you doing this during your career, or is this something you picked up afterwards?
No, I've been doing it for about 15 years. So I've been doing it a long time.
And you all learned by yourself, or is this or someone actually teach you how to do this stuff?
All self-taught.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Eric, we really appreciate time with you. And I mean, I just want to get like right into your career now. I mean, I've listened to some interviews. You talked about how you got Darren into a tough man competition, beat 18 guys, and pretty much said, I might as well go pro with this. Just out of curiosity, when you decided to go pro, was there any kind of change that you had to do in training, or was it just literally, nope, I think I figured it out, let me find a fight?
No, there was a lot of training involved. It was more like 70 or 80 guys that I won in tough man. I won several world tournaments, and I won regionals. And so, I mean, it got to the point to where when I entered a tough man, nobody would fight, so they pretty much kicked me out.
That's gotta be terrible. Like when trying to make a career, like you even said, like you were still as a tough man, like balancing a regular job too, right?
I worked a full time job, and I mean, some days you work 8-10 hours, and you have to leave there and then go fight that night.
So how do you even listen, you grew up a tough kid, and like we know kids who are tough, but how do you go from that mentality of just, hey, the local tough guy to being like, all right, you know, I'm going to enter the ring? Did you just pick up boxing? Did you pick up like kickboxing? What was your first exposure to the ring?
Well, like I said, the tough man, when I first started,
it was
tough man. And then, yeah, that was it. And then I went pro from there.
Simple enough. I had
probably 10 fights in tough man that were pay-per-view on Showtime.
I know, yeah.
How many fighters are on Showtime before they turn pro? I had a video game. I had a video game made about me before I turned pro.
That's got to be like the most awesome feeling, like almost like, what were you doing? What was your side job again? Were you building houses, was it? I forget.
My full-time job, what a side job. I could build mobile homes.
You build... So that's got to be insane, like somebody, kids going to school, I'm getting a new home, it's getting built by Butterbean right now. That's so freaking awesome.
Well, they probably didn't know who was building my house at that time.
I can't imagine many people were late with the bill when...
I had nothing to do with collections on that, believe me.
So when you get... You know, you start to get some notoriety. Obviously, you're clearly good at what you entered, and you kind of found your purpose. What is the next step going from, like you said, the tough man and whatnot, and being not even pro yet, to being like, hey, I really need to, you know, I got a personality, I got a name, I can make money in this business. What was your first step into becoming a pro and becoming a name that like, hey, when did you start making a living off of this?
Well, becoming a pro is really easy. You just got to say, hey, I want to fight professionally. And you get paid to fight, and then that's a pro fight.
That's it.
It's really that simple. I mean, if you get a promoter that sees you knock people out and, you know, put you on the card fighting somebody, that's a pro right there. Bam. Mm. That easy. Then you just knock people out and have fun and get paid for it. Why not go to jail?
When you were a kid, would you get into like scraps in the schoolyard and stuff and knock people out, or was this like all just found? Like okay, I'm really good after that strongman thing.
No, I mean I didn't fight a lot in school. I mean, I wasn't a good kid. Trust me, I was in trouble all the time. But yeah, no.
Now, when you like get into like the real professional side, are you changing anything that you are? Are you like learning about, okay, I got to defend myself more or something? Or are you just still on the mentality of, you know, lean back, throw it with all my weight, see if he goes down?
I had pretty much a full-time trainer. I mean, it was a real deal when I turned pro.
And like, how many hours were you going back and forth on training? You know, it was like a 12-hour day and then like another 2 hours training?
It starts, you know, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 6. If you get a late start, you go out and run and jog and ride bike and do your cardio in the morning. And then in the afternoon we train. And then later, you know, sometimes close to fight, we train twice a day.
So, you know, as you become a name and you become like people start to really be like, holy shit, this guy is absolutely legit. Where does your career take a turn to like where do you think was the first time you like real big fighters like turned to like actual legitimate respect for you? Like, was there a certain fight that you won? Like someone they were like, yeah, this guy, there's no chance. This Butterbean guy is not for real. And then you beat someone where you really got that clout among fighters. Like, oh shit.
When you knock out 10 or 12 guys, they pretty much know you're there to knock people out.
Right.
I mean, some guys had bigger names than I did at the time, but they were billing me higher on the poster and they were not happy about it. Because, you know, I put butts in the seat. People wanted to watch a fight. They didn't want to watch two guys dancing, jabbing, running, hugging. They want to see somebody get knocked out, and that's what I did. I went out there to have a good time, and I had a lot of fun knocking people out.
I mean, that's the thing I loved about your fights. You know, it wasn't like the second that bell rang, I knew you're going right into the guy's face. You know, I mean, how many – like, did you ever come across anybody that was exactly like you and all? Because it always seemed like they're always shocked when you're in their face in 2 seconds into the fight.
I could only wish somebody would fight like me. They didn't want to stand there. They didn't want to fight. I always come right at them. I'm here. Let's go. Let's bang. Mm. You know, that's why me and Tyson would have been such a great fight in the day, because both of us went out like that.
Yeah, I mean,
no backward steps.
I mean, it's fascinating nobody got it together. I mean, nowadays you see they got McGregor and Mayweather together. I mean, was there any, like, real true discussions with a guy like Tyson, or maybe, like, a Holyfield or a Foreman where we could have got you with, a big name?
You know, Holmes, I don't know any bigger name than Larry Holmes.
That's true. And that thing went 10 and all, when people didn't think you can go longer than 4.
True story.
Damn.
So as you kind of climb into, you start, like, one thing that, it was funny, because we scheduled this interview, and then the other day I'm watching Dark Side of the Ring, and I see this documentary about Bart Gunn and how he wins this Tough Enough tournament, and they put him up against you. What are you thinking, like, this is the easiest payday of my life? Like, you got a guy who has been boxing for basically a couple weeks, really? Are you thinking this is the easiest?
He had a real trainer for 7-8 months.
Okay.
I mean, he went and, if Bart would have come out throwing on, like, Tough Man. I mean, in Tough Man, anybody's got a chance. When you got 3 1-minute rounds?
Right.
Come on. He should have come out swinging, not trying to box.
Yeah. I mean, but you even said, like, in the thing, you're like, this guy's got no chance. Do you at any point, do you feel bad about that? Or are you just like, screw this? Like, yeah. they gave him the money.
Not a bit. Not a bit. He honestly thought he was going to win.
I guess you got to go in there like that. Now, you've done it pretty much all. You've done boxing, you've done pro wrestling, you've done kickboxing. Of any of the three,
I've done it all.
Of any of the three of transitioning them, was there any one that you considered tougher than the other, or is it just pretty much another day in the ring with Butterbean?
Well, when I first fought my first kickboxing with K1, you know, the kicks were kind of a shock. So, I mean, he kicked me a couple good times. That's it. I'm done. I'm knocking him out. So that was pretty quick like that.
What would you say was your greatest opponent of all? I mean, we talked about Larry Holmes. Was there anyone that you actually went into like, this might be tougher than I even imagined?
You know, I never thought like that. I mean, I could beat anybody if they got in front of me and they wanted to fight. You know, Holmes won. He won by jabbing and running. Yeah. And he run.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let me ask you, we're entering, like the other night, I'm watching UFC during this pandemic, and it's really cool to...
Okay.
What's the crazy questions now?
hey, if you entered UFC now, you think you, like, if you were in your prime and you there was a sport like UFC at the time, you think you could have made a run in that?
Well, I fought Pride, and I done really well in Pride, which was...
Yep.
More prestigious than UFC at the time. I mean, if you know, all the guys in the U.S. wanted to fight UFC, all the UFC guys wanted to go fight Pride.
Right.
Pride was much more respected and higher ranking than UFC ever thought about being.
Did you ever think about, like, losing more weight to, like, get down to, like, the regular heavyweight divisions, or was it just always... This is what I am. This is what you get.
That's pretty much it. Why? I mean, honestly, 320 pounds is a good fight weight.
So I got to ask you, what are you doing post career? What keeps Butterbean busy?
Oh, like I said, I make my pens and razors, and you know, I make handmade razors and handmade ink pens, and spend time with the grandkids. That's about it.
So you got grandkids. Huh? How many kids grandkids you have?
I got 8 grandkids.
Jesus!
Wow.
So do they know of how badass you were at one point? Or I mean, you're still badass, but
pretty much they got an idea.
Probably really well behaved when you watch them.
Eric, we can't thank you enough for giving us some time tonight. If anybody wanted to get a hold of you or see what you're up to, what's a good place to get in touch with you?
I'm on my Facebook. It's Butterbean Eric Ash. Butterbean is my real name, Eric Ash.
That's awesome. And out of curiosity, when people meet you, do they usually call you Eric, or is there always
Butterbean or Bean? I also have an Instagram, but, you know, I'm working on getting it certified. It takes time, but, you know, they can get a hold of me on Instagram also.
Well, we had an awesome time talking to you. In fact, when we told one of our comedian friends that we were chatting with you tonight, he demanded us telling you that they should do a 30 for 30 on you because your career was amazing. We love everything about it. We need more butter beans in this world. They should be doing the Butter Bean Last Dance, no doubt.
Right.
I'm working right now with a company doing a documentary on my pretty much my whole life. So when we get more into it, there'll be more interviews going out and things like that. Yeah, keep an eye out for that.
Awesome.
Definitely will.
We'll be on that documentary too, Mike, just to let you know. So. All right, the one and only Butterbean, Mike.
Heck of a talker.
Yeah.
Heck of a talker. I thought he could have went for another half a minute. But
hey.
Hey, we're just happy to get Eric on the show and really appreciate him giving us some time, you know?
Absolutely. Another, you know, he's another guy that I think maybe we could arrange a Verbal Shenanigans charity fight, you versus him.
Hmm. Well, speaking of fights and all the guests that we have, Scott, you kind of brought up on a previous episode. I got a little bracket thing here of some of our previous guests.
Okay.
And I'm kind of curious to see who ends up as the Verbal Shenanigans fighting champion.
So they, you know, they have like the BMF belt and they made it just for the Jorge Masvidal, Nate Diaz to fight for. So we're making like a Verbal Shenanigans Tough Guy Championship. Just we're having a tournament and crowning a champion here.
Now, and the key is all these people are fighting in their prime.
Okay, so. And this is pure fighting. So this is like two guys in a ring or an octagon.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right, so let's do veteran UFC Dan Severn versus Gary Goodridge.
Woo! I wonder if that ever happened. wow. Severn, Goodridge. Goodridge had a lot of fights, as did Severn. I think Gary was possibly more of like a one of those old school, just huge, like, if I hit you, you know, you're going to go down kind of guy. Whereas Dan, we see in like UFC and mixed martial arts that wrestling is very, very valuable. And it can help him win. And so I'm going to go with Dan Severn. I think Dan advances there.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
No offense to Gary. Don't find me, Gary.
Yeah.
Episode 200, guys. Go listen to Gary Goodridge. Dan Severn, I forget what episode he is, but we'll talk.
We'll look it up.
Yep.
Family feud here, Jim versus Dan Miller.
All right. We had Jim and Dan Miller on the show. It was really cool. We had him at our friends at Tap House 15. We did a live podcast there. I'm going to go with Jim. Jim has more fights. Dan's career kind of came to an end a little shortly with some concussion issues. And Jim's still fighting, man. He lost his last fight, but I think he won a two before. And then Jim's still out there fighting. He's still just the other day, the memory popped up on our Instagram of him wearing our shirt while I was training. So that was pretty cool. So I'm going to go Jim Miller. He's still active. And I think Jim's still got a couple fights left in him. It doesn't seem like he's going to stop yet. And I think he's going to do I can see like two or three more fights on his end.
It seems like one of them lifers where it's like, I'm not going until Dana kind of shows me the door.
He's in that like Cowboy Cerrone category. He's just will fight forever.
Yeah. James Krause versus Alex Morano.
Oh.
Well, side note, both of them fought in UFC 247. Both of them lost.
Oh, they both fought? Oh, nice.
They both fought, yeah.
Because the other day I was watching UFC and James Krause was somebody's cornerman. And I don't remember who exactly, but he was the coach. And it was interesting because they were like, oh, James Krause, you know, he's a go-for-it-all type of guy. You know, high motor type of guy. I forget who was fighting, but it was basically the guy he fought. He was coaching. He was kind of going too hard, and then eventually kind of got gassed out. And they were actually giving James a little criticism, the coaching staff, a little criticism about making his guy go too hard. I'd have to see who it is. But Alex Morono, like, I haven't heard much from him lately.
His last fight didn't really go too well. He got KO'd by punches in 27 seconds in the first round.
Yeah. I'm going to go with James Krause. James Krause has a little clout in the game. I have heard his voice come, like his name come up a couple of times and things that I wasn't talking about him. So I'm just going to go by that. I think Krause is kind of a respected guy in the UFC. Not that Morano isn't. I just think Krause takes that fight.
All right. And somewhere Alex Morano is saying, not cool.
Not cool, bro. That was a while ago, too. Wow.
Tonight's guest, Butterbean, versus Michael Bent.
Okay. Wow. All right, well, hopefully Butterbean doesn't listen to this. now, Butterbean, clearly raw power, but Michael Bent in his prime was... you know, going with Holyfield and very high-level boxer. I know Butterbean probably wanted to be in fights more than obviously what Michael Bent did reveal. His whole life, a lot of it was his dad kind of pushing him into it. But I think athletically, if you look at the pictures of Michael Bent when he was a boxer, he's a freaking monster, man. Really fit and... fought some of the best, was a champ. I think Michael Bent would actually take that down. And Michael Bent also size-wise, I think, could hold up with Butterbean. So it's not like Butterbean versus someone very small who's going to take those shots. I think Michael Bent can take it.
Okay, yeah. I'd say that's a 50-50, but I agree with your logic there. Now, we don't have all fire, so I got some of the tougher people for some of these. So, first on the wrestlers, Al Snow versus Psycho Sid.
Wow. Huh. Al Snow, Psycho Sid. I know Al Snow is very involved in, like, still developing, like, wrestling talent and running, like, wrestling camps and stuff like that. And Al Snow looks frightening still.
He's got insane muscles, man.
Yeah, he's big. And Psycho Sid, so you guys should go listen to that episode. It was basically, I think me and Berlo asked like four questions and Sid kind of took over the rest. Psycho Sid was in that Lenny Dykstra category where we kind of just
like,
sat back.
We didn't have to do work. We just said, do your thing. We'll give you guidance once in every 20 minutes.
Yeah. This is a tough one. This is a really tough one because Sid was a ridiculous athlete too. Ridiculous athlete and huge. Wrestling-wise, I think Sid played football too.
Professional softball player too.
I think I'm going to go Sid.
Okay.
I know Al. That's probably the hardest one, the most evenly matched one so far, I think.
Because
I know Al Snow is like a badass. Like I know.
Yeah. You
know.
And you know what? Also, his wife, man. Like I saw her Instagram. She is Jack. God bless her, man. That's like, no, I didn't. You walk me across the street, ma'am.
Yeah,
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't feel passionate about my answer on that one because I could see the other side really. But really also being valuable. But.
Yeah, I probably would have leaned towards Snow because I think, in my opinion, he probably has better wrestling knowledge than Sid because Sid, he left companies from time to time, so that wasn't his heart. But I could see either or in just a straight-out fight.
I went with size a little bit on my decision. I went with size. Sid is a monstrous man.
Martial artists here, Daniel Piscina versus Phillip Sahagun.
I'm going to go, so again, let's audience know. So Daniel Piscina was the guy who was like the character actor for like Scorpion and Johnny Cage and a bunch of the Mortal Kombat guys.
And but I still also see, a legit mixed martial artist.
Yeah, I still see him posting things like with weapons and things like that. But I'm going to go with Sahagun. I don't know. Daniel seems more like a showman kind of martial artist, where Sahagun I know was in a lot of tournaments and things like that. So I think I'm going to go with him.
Okay. This one's a little mixed bag just to get somebody in, but I think this is an interesting fight. Cam Jansen versus Jack O'Halloran.
Wow. God, we've had a lot of fighters on the show. Jack O'Halloran a couple weeks ago, former boxer, tough guy, mob guy, and then Cam Jansen, a hockey player who loved to fight. He was a great interview, too. I'm going to go with Jack O'Halloran, though, trained boxer, whereas hockey fighters, you know, a lot of times they're kind of like, you know, scrappers with high energy.
There's no plan. It's just punch away.
So I think Jack O'Halloran had some really legendary fights and whatnot, so I'm going to go with Jack.
Okay. And not to leave women out of this, the final matchup, Sharon Alexander versus Ray Hollett.
Okay, so Sharon Alexander was the world's largest sumo wrestler,
female sportswoman,
and one of my favorite guests in the show ever. Me and her have a special relationship.
What's your thoughts of Ray Hollett, Scott?
And Ray was Zap from American Gladiators. Who you think that sounds like cool, but her interview really stunk. I mean, you guys can go listen to it, but I think it was in the same episode as Al Snow, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
That's
correct.
Yeah, that was a long episode. But I am going to have to take Zap. I just think she can move better. She's pretty jacked and more fit, where Sharon, you know, Sharon's a big girl. You know, I don't think she can kind of stay with the speed of Zap.
Gotcha. Okay, so
I love you, Sharon.
Versus Miller.
Dan Severn versus Jim Miller. That is a fight, man. Oof. That's really tough. I think I'm going to go... I think I'll go Dan Severn. little bit of size on him, maybe more wrestling experience. But Jim's like a black belt in jiu-jitsu too, so I get Dan.
That'd be a fun pay-per-view watch. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dan probably was, size-wise, was bigger. Jim's usually at the 155, 145, 155. So Dan's a big dude. So I guess I'll go with Dan.
James Krause versus Michael Bent.
So a boxer versus an MMA fighter. I guess I'll go... I guess I got to go with James Krause. I think mixed martial arts wins. I think Krause is a jiu-jitsu guy also and a striker. So I don't know if Bent's strike can handle with the kicks and stuff. So I don't know. I mean, Bent's a big boy, though. So
yeah, that's why I've probably been leaning towards him and all. I think he's got some big height to him and everything.
Yeah, I'll go with Krause, though.
Okay. Psycho Sid versus Philip Sahagun.
I think Psycho Sid would throw Philip Sahagun right out of the ring. I don't know Philip personally, and haven't really watched him too much, but I don't know if he has the size to hold up to Psycho Sid. It'd be like one of those videos, I think, where you see the karate guy like doing all these poses and moves, and then the big brute guy just absolutely just, just runs him over. So Psycho Sid.
Jack O'Halloran versus Zap.
Jack O'Halloran would kill Zap, and I'm not sure that he wouldn't do it in real life either. He seems like a guy that is very unapologetic about his past and his mafia ties, so Jack seems, Jack would murder him. Her.
All right, final four, we got Dan Severn versus James Krause.
It's tough. It's another tough one. Severn's got the toughest road to the finals, I think, as far as taking down the MMA guys. I'm just going to go Severn because of his he's very well known throughout the whole world of wrestling and martial arts. Krause is, he's known to really deep MMA guys, and Dan Severn did that too. So I guess I'll go Dan Severn. He was in some of the biggest pay-per-views, so I just don't know.
Just on attitude alone, I keep leaning towards Severn. Like, yeah. Severn's one of those, why don't you tell me I'm not good enough?
Yeah.
Where it's like, I dare you to anger me.
Yeah, yeah. And, it's always you got to play that game, old school MMA guys versus new school MMA guys where they know a little bit of everything. But I'll still go with Severn.
Okay. Sid versus Jack O'Halloran.
Oof. Big boys going at it there.
That's a haymaker kind of matchup there.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jack O'Halloran. I think, just the talent of a fighter, where Sid is like a brute size, kind of huge, muscly guy. But I think Jack in a fight, Jack was a big dude too. Like when you look at pictures of him, I think Jack just outpoints him and is able to, use his boxing to his advantage.
I think Jack would be looking forward to that matchup. That's yeah. Why I gave him the advantage.
Right.
And he'd do it. He's like, it's going to be 3 months. He's like, no, 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Let's get in there.
Right.
So finally, Scott, who is the toughest person we have interviewed? Dan Severn or Jack O'Halloran?
I'm going to have to give it to Dan. I mean, talking about him in the last round, I think he'd be able to kind of ward off the punches maybe and get Jack to the ground. And then on the ground, it's his game. I think Jack, similar to Michael Bent, kind of fall in the same category. They're amazing boxers. We're going with what information we know. We don't know if they have any other martial arts experience or whatnot. But I guess I got to go with Dan Severn as the winner, man.
That's a solid pick. I think he would have been my end choice. So, not a bad fighter in the groups, pretty much. But
no,
he had the toughest way to get to the top, and he lasted all the way to the finish.
Yeah. All right, cool, man. So, Dan Severn, you win the all your accolades, your WWE, your UFC belts, your wrestling championships. So check your mailbox soon, Dan, because we're going to be sending you the Verbal Shenanigans belt. It's basically just one of my belts with a t-shirt wrapped around the front of it, but it's still the championship belt.
Absolutely. Now tune in next week where we do the rest of our guests. Scott, Barbara Jo Wehmeyer versus Pat Cambyses.
Pat Cambyses all the way. She knows them caves, man. She'll take you somewhere dark.
She'll get dirty. She'll gouge you.
Now, So, I mean, episode 300, this is kind of what we do. We go from real topics to guests to games, kind of like a radio show. And I wanted to... I thought it was important to hook up. We haven't had two guests on in a very long time. We've kind of narrowed it down, or we do one guest on. But I just thought, because of what's going on in the world, I don't think there's a better voice that we can think of that's been on our show. I'm sure you probably agree with me, Mike, that could kind of, you know, weigh in on kind of what's going on in the country. And I think that's more important than us, like, talking about our life right now or playing some stupid game that we could play on the next episode or whatever. So I got in contact with Tom Verney. And let me give you a little background on Tom Verney. Tom Verney's been on our show three times, bro? Three times. Yeah. And Tom is a really fascinating man. He's super smart. He was a police detective in NYPD for 22 years, I believe. And he's been on CNN. He's been on a bunch of things. All the time. He's the voice I think should be running for office, as far as, like, he should be part of somebody's cabinet, because he's very smart as far as updated police training. He's also a gay man, which is makes his voice even more interesting, because he hits so many different perspectives on the way policing should be done, or what's wrong. So I really wanted to get him on, even if just for a few minutes, to kind of talk about what's going on before we wrap this episode for now. So let's get our good friend, Mr. Tom Verney, on the line. Tom Verney, how are you?
What is going on over here?
Oh, man, you know... I'm glad we can have you on during a time of peace and joy and everything else.
Nothing to talk about.
Tom,
this is unicorns and puppies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is actually our 300th episode, so this should be like a
really
like a celebration and whatnot. But
Mazel tov.
Oh yes. But I said last week, I said, you know, like, with everything that's going on, we could play stupid games and interview, you know, whoever we usually interview. But I said, I gotta see if Tom's available, even for a couple minutes. Clearly, an important time in America, and possibly a kind of a linchpin moment where we look back and say, okay, maybe things change for the better or for worse. But so, Tom, thank you for coming on for a few minutes. But
anytime.
So Tom, let's start with what happened. I guess it was it Thursday? Last Thursday? I forget the date. But with Mr. Floyd, and we see this video come out, and I remember seeing it in the pop up on my Facebook feed and go, "Oh no." Like, I thought immediately maybe it was from a long time ago, and it came out pretty quickly, I guess. It surfaced pretty quickly, and you know, you see the video, and it's gut-wrenching and really hard to get through, you know, for any person. But what I really wanted to bring you on was for, you know, the perspective you have of, you know, doing it for 22 years or 25 years and then still being involved and still having your voice out there. You know, we see George Floyd on the ground, and he's pinned, and he's, you know, begging for his mother, trying to breathe, you know. And people surrounding him, it's just a situation that we've never really kind of seen, I don't think, as far as people being around a victim like that, just begging for, almost begging on behalf of him. They seem to be, you know, kind of telling the cops what, go through, I guess, a cop's perspective on what's going on the first time you see that video, and then we'll kind of break it down a little bit.
So, I mean, well, from a real cop's perspective,
yes,
because
what's going on? Yeah, what's wrong?
Yeah, because this guy, Derek Dickhead, whatever his name is,
yep.
He's not a real cop. And quite frankly, the Three Stooges that were around him, in my opinion, are not real cops either. So, I think I was pretty fortunate in almost 22 years in the NYPD that I hadn't never had to personally witness something like that.
Right.
I mean, there were absolutely, a few times that I could recall during demonstrations or riots similar to what's happening now that I've been in the middle of, or even just arrest situations where I remember years and years ago, this is probably back in the early 90s, there was a guy got into, I think he was wanted on a felony warrant, if I'm not mistaken, was driving like a maniac in the middle of Manhattan. The cops pulled him over. And then he bolted out of the car. They found a weapon in the car and then knocked the cop. One of the cops who pulled him over knocked him to the ground. And then they started a foot chase and or vehicle chase to the middle of Manhattan, middle of the day, broad daylight. And so these cops chased him literally all the way across town. And at the time I was working in Midtown on the east side. And, they finally caught up with him. And, the cop that he, I don't know if he punched him in the face and knocked him down or shoved him against the car, knocked him down, whatever it was. But he, by the time he caught up with them, he obviously wanted to get his, his lumps in.
Right.
And so now the thing here is that they caught up with him and he had not been cuffed at this point. So he was still violently fighting with them. So, and so the way the law is structured is that, the police can use whatever force is necessary. Whatever lawful legal force is necessary to get someone into custody, right? So if you're here and you're fighting with the cops, the cops can go here, right, to supersede whatever that force is.
Right.
So, so they were using mace and batons and then I think one guy had a radio that he was hitting him with because I think his baton fell to the floor.
Jeez.
And then they finally started to get him. They got one cuff on him, and then they were struggling to get his other arm over to get the other cuff on. And then the other guy, I think one of the other cops that had chased him all the way across town, finally made it over there. And then he wanted to get like a free throw in, and we were like, no, that's it, that's over, it's over, it's over. Because at that point, now the guy's cuffed, he's on the ground, and now they're dragging him into a patrol car to be brought back to the precinct to be processed,
right,
for this Midtown mayhem that he caused. And that's the general rule, is that if someone is resisting, that the police going to use whatever force they have to get them into custody.
Right.
And then at that point, once they're cuffed, they should be put in the back of the patrol car and brought to the precinct or wherever it is that they're going to do the arrest processing for that person to bring them to jail to go see the judge.
Right. Yeah.
So, here, and the stories have conflicted. I have CNN on the other monitor over here, so I'm kind of like, going back and forth to see what they're reporting. But, I've heard reports that he was, he was not compliant, and then he put him in the car, and he was not compliant, and they took him out of the car.
Right.
So I'm a little confused as to why they would have done that. Like, why would you – I mean, I put people in the back of a patrol car that were not compliant, and they were handcuffed. And they were kicking the back of the seat or kicking the windows and, cracking the windows and whatever, which is why now most patrol cars will have these cages in the back.
Because,
A lot of people will kick the windows out and then try to, crawl out and escape while handcuffed. So I don't know. Cuffed and then put into the back of the car, why they chose to drag him out of the and onto the ground. So that was mistake number one, if that's was the correct reporting that I was reading. And then everything from there, it just went downhill very quickly. I was in the street, I did plainclothes work. I investigated, I was involved in hate crimes investigations. Taught in the police academy, crime prevention, community affairs. So I had my irons in a lot of different fires in 22 years. So, and in all that time, and I'm still a certified police instructor. I try to keep up with what's going on, even though I've been out for 6.5 years. I don't know of a policy or procedure that allows an officer to take their knee and to place it firmly into someone's neck and hold it there for 9 minutes while the person slowly dies. I just don't know of one.
Just hearing you say that, and it's funny because I've seen the hairs on my arm just stood up. You know what I mean? Like, just hearing that, putting your knee on someone's neck for 9 minutes. Like,
yeah.
I mean, personally, I said it last week. I think it was an ego thing. I think this guy was being called out, and he literally, something in his head told him, I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to be told what to do.
Yeah, I mean, clearly this guy snapped on some level because the former, the cop, Derek, whatever his name is. I mean, clearly he there's something inside him that what would and again, I'm not aware. I haven't heard any reporting that showed or said that Mr. Floyd assaulted this officer. Right? I'm not aware of any of that. I could be wrong. I haven't heard any reporting to suggest that or to say that. I've heard reporting to say that he was resisting. I haven't heard any reporting that said that he personally attacked this specific officer, okay?
Right.
And even if he did, even if he got a couple of shots in this guy's face, once he is cuffed, he is now in custody, and their job, this is where policing is kind of, uniform across the board in all 50 states. Once the person is in custody and cuffed, the next step is to get them out of that scene, bring them to wherever they're going to be. They're going to do the booking paperwork,
right,
and then bring them to jail.
Right, and let the system start.
Yeah, the legal system starts at that point. So now it's, listen, if you didn't get, your free throw in before you got this guy cuffed,
too bad, so sad.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand what would possess someone to think that this was okay in any stretch of the imagination. No. And the three goons who are sitting there, a couple of which were also kneeling on him, and the other guy's just standing there kind of shoving, as people are pleading with them, he's kind of blowing it off. I could be wrong. I thought I heard something along the lines of, don't do drugs, kids, or some sort of flippant sarcastic remark or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, so, so the three cops, they were all fired, obviously. They should all be arrested. They should all be facing murder charges. Because they are as guilty as he is. Now, obviously, this one guy is the guiltiest because he directly, right, as far as the autopsy results have shown and what we're hearing now, was the direct result of his dying.
Yeah.
Right? So he, of the four, should absolutely do about 300 years in jail.
Yeah.
I don't think they have the death penalty in Minnesota, but if they do, he would be a ripe suspect for that too. But, he should spend, at the minimum, the rest of his miserable life in jail.
Yep.
And getting get what's coming to him in jail. And the three of them should also go to jail. So I haven't seen a cop yet. And I'm on the cop boards, the Facebook chats and all that.
Yep.
Friends of mine who have retired, friends of mine who are still active. I haven't seen one police officer yet in New York or anywhere around the country that I know people in other states that has any issue with them all being fired or any issue with them being all locked up and put in jail. Not one. So it's uniform across law enforcement. This is an unbelievable embarrassment and black eye for law enforcement. Yeah. And it's something that if you are a real cop and you are out there attempting to do the job correctly every day, this is an offensive, horrible act that, should never happen.
No.
Just out of curiosity, Tom, say you detain somebody and they kind of get loose and get away. Is there a punishment for the cop or something specific that would derail them in some way? Because it always seems like with anything like this case or like ones where some guy gets shot in the back or something like that, they're saying, well, they're getting away. And it just always seems weird to me that it's like,
It's one thing to say, like, all right, a violent person, they have guns, they have something that it's like, okay, this person's going out to hurt somebody, but it just seems like the natural go was, well, he was getting away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hypothetically, if he was already cuffed, you know, assuming that he was already cuffed, which he was, if he had somehow, you know, gotten out of the car or got up off the ground and ran away, how far are you going to go with your hands behind your back? That's going to be pretty uncomfortable after a while. And even if he did get away, then you know who he is, and you catch him another day. Yeah. I mean, he's a local guy. It's not like he's, you know, passing through town and you'll never see this guy again. No, he's going to, you know, fly to his condo in you know, Guadalajara. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, he's a local guy. You'll catch up with him again. So I just, you know, yes, if a prisoner escapes, is that embarrassing? Yeah. Could the cops be punished for that internally? Yes. An escaped prisoner, you know, especially a violent prisoner, is a huge problem, you know, and a huge negative mark against, you know, an officer that is responsible. So, and when you're the arresting officer, by the way, you are personally responsible for the safety of that prisoner. That's something that's also pretty uniform when it comes to laws and police training across the United States. So I don't know who was the official arresting officer in that case of the four goons that attacked Mr. Floyd. It doesn't really matter. I mean, at this point, that officer should technically also be held to a higher standard too, because they allowed this to occur.
Yeah.
To their person that they're responsible for.
I mean, speaking of the other guys, like, you know, my first thought is you got a guy handcuffed on his stomach, being held down, and three other cops around him, and he's got no weapon. I can't imagine what threat he is. Mm-hmm. Like, but my question is, the other guys, what do you think it's from, like, them not correcting him or not? Is it like a culture of, was he like a higher-ranked officer and they don't want to correct it? Like, What is going through their minds where they're not recognizing, where someone's got to recognize it when the general public is able to come up with a phone and record it and say, hey, you're killing this man, and people around him get off him. And then there's three trained officers. Like, listen, say the one guy snapped and he lost it and he's a maniac. Mm-hmm. The other three, there has to be some kind of, like, find your balls, and I don't care if it's your captain or your, you know, and say, you got to get him off, push him off. Like, what do you think is the mentality there? Like, whether, are they just following orders? Like, is that the old, you know, adage that they're doing there? Like, what's going on?
You know, I wish I could.
Or what do you think? I guess, you know, like, what?
Yeah, I wish I could say with certainty, because again, for myself, this is not behavior I would have tolerated.
Right.
And like I said, and I would say that the handful of times that I literally had to, maybe even less, that I had to physically get involved to avoid that situation from escalating, you know, it happened so few times in such a long period of time, which goes to the, you know, the frequency in which this occurs. I don't think this happens as frequent as people might imagine it does.
Right.
It does happen, without a doubt, because I've seen it happen. But I also saw, you know, that I did intervene, and there other officers also were intervening. So it luckily never rose to the level of, you know, a crime being committed. You know, I think had we just kind of stood back, then potentially, and like these guys did, then it absolutely, the probability was very high for it to have escalated into something else. Yeah. But we weren't even going to take that chance. Having said that, you know, I've done training with cops around the country, and you know, I spent a couple of weeks down in Louisiana, you know, during Hurricane Katrina. And the one thing I've learned is that policing outside of New York City is very different, and just about most other places, and you know, especially in the Deep South, things are very different down there, and especially if you are a person of color, you know, for sure. Things have done very differently down there. So I don't. So yeah, is it that they're afraid to counteract a senior officer? Yeah, that must, I'm assuming, is part of why they felt they shouldn't have done something or said something? Did they feel if, okay, well, if I pull him off, are these other guys going to think that I'm weak,
yeah,
you know, in some way, or yeah, or that, you know, I'm kowtowing to the community, or it's just, it's so, I was nauseous.
Me too.
Watching the video. And when I first heard about it, yeah, I had to watch the video because it just seems so far out of the my brain trying to conceptualize this. And because whenever I hear about these stories, and then subsequently, if I get called in by a local news network or CNN or whatever it may be,
right,
to talk about it, you know, then now I have to look at all. I have to look at everything because I wasn't there, right? So I have to look at as much footage and as much, you know, newswire feeds that come in about the facts and evidence. I couldn't actually believe what I had initially heard. So I watched the video and then watched it again, you know, when they had the other video from a different angle, just to see if I missed anything. But watching the initial video of when they're videotaping him literally slowly dying, I was nauseous. Yep. Watching it. I had a severe visceral reaction to watching that. And immediately it was clear to me, again, not that I'm the judge, jury, and executioner, but it was clear to me that this is beyond any sort of modern day logical, legal training, right, policy and procedure that I know of. And I knew it was going to be bad. Yeah. I knew it was going to be bad. And I just, and rightfully so, people are just blown away out of their minds with it. But what I can say is, like I said before, is that no one, I shouldn't say no one is more upset by it than the police, but police officers, any legitimate police officer worth their weight in their, you know, vest and gun belt, is just sickened, yep, by this.
Yeah.
Not because it's, you know, because whenever something happens somewhere, it there's always a ripple effect. You know, when after the Rodney King incident in L.A. almost 30 years ago, that had a ripple effect throughout the United States. There were riots and protests and demonstrations all over the place, right? When Eric Garner happened in Staten Island, when Ferguson happened with Michael Brown, there are these high-profile incidents involving police and the death of someone, and usually where the they focus on where the, you know, the victim is African American and he also happens to be white, you know, because of course that's saucy for the news too.
Right.
There are many other incidents where there's a black suspect who's killed by a black officer, a white suspect who's, yeah, killed by a white officer, and you never hear about them, right? So let's also keep this in some sort of context too, right?
Absolutely.
However, in each one of those incidents, when they occur, just because they're occurring in one city. I was on CNN. There was an incident that took place a few years ago in Louisiana. I believe it was in Baton Rouge. And it was involving the police and someone. And then there were two officers that were killed there. And as we were talking, I was on live with Don Lemon on CNN talking about what happened in Louisiana when the five officers were being shot and killed in Dallas. Jeez. If you remember that whole,
wow, thing. Yes. Mm-hmm.
There was a Black Lives Matter rally taking place in Dallas, which was peaceful. It was a peaceful rally. Everything was going great. The police, you know, and the community were actually there, and they were talking, and there was a lot of, you know, good dialogue, and there was no issues whatsoever. Yeah, there were some angry people for sure, very, you know, emotional and rightfully so. And then the psycho came along and started picking off cops. And then it became this big standoff. You probably remember it. So, but I was on the air when this was all happening. First, there was a report that came in that a Dallas officer was killed during this during the tail end of this peaceful demonstration. And then it was two. And then it was three. And we were like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And we wound up being on the air, I think, for 3-4 hours.
Wow.
Because it just didn't stop until finally they got the guy.
Yeah, that was a wild incident too. God.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's the concern that I have is that, you know, it only takes, you know, it doesn't take much. You know, we have, there's no shortage of guns in the streets in this country. There's no shortage of psychos in this country.
Yep.
There's no shortage of anarchists in this country. So all you need is a combination of a couple of those things. And now you have some cop somewhere, you know, the big city or small town, who has nothing to do with what took place in Minneapolis. And now they're going to wind up getting assassinated.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's the concern. Right,
the domino effect from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what exactly, like, when something big like this happens, is, like, in the police end, do they have, like, a meeting to go, okay, this is the person that's going to do the communications, all you people on the beat, you know, be a little, is it more be a little weary or be more talkative to the community? Is there, like, any real, I hate to say direction, but is there, when something like this happens, is it the police's or their job to kind of say, everybody get together, this is our plan going ahead?
So when I, the unit that I worked in when I left, I worked for one of the big chiefs in a department. It was a citywide unit. So it was the citywide community affairs and crime prevention. So I had 16 different jobs there, but but one of the jobs that I had was that I was part of a citywide response team. So any high profile incident that was going to make, you know, the 5 or 6 or 11 o'clock news, they would send a group of, they would call us up. If we were on duty, we would just stay on duty and work an extended tour. Or if we were home, they would call us up and say, hey, you busy, can you come in? We would come in, it'd be on overtime or whatever, and we'd suit up and go out. So our job, our main job was to respond to that location, especially if it was a police-involved shooting, right? That was like top priority. Gang shootings also were another big priority. But we would also cover all the stuff, like, you know, planes that would land in the Hudson River, you know, we'd go to the stuff like that too. But especially with police-involved shootings or a police incident where it involves someone who was seriously injured or killed, the idea there was that a group of us would go out and then kind of coordinate with whatever community leaders were in that area. So maybe people of faith, you know, faith leaders, community activists, you know, local community leaders, local council people, and to coordinate with them to kind of get them in a circle, take whatever facts and evidence that were had already been established at that time, and without compromising the investigation that was actively taking place, kind of side by side, and releasing as many facts and evidence, bits of evidence as possible to these people, and then let them disperse that, you know, very simple, 3 or 4 quick, like, factual bullet lines that they could, you know, on paper, give it to them on paper or give it to them where they could write it down, so they could disperse that information out to the masses. And then we would also kind of go along with that. So, you know, once these crowds would form, and then if there was some sort of, you know, quasi-leadership within these, you know, crowds, then we would start to try to have dialogue with these people before it amped up, before the news reports it, puts their tag and their headline on it, and then starts to spool up, you know, the angst and the anger, where people are working only with a headline or two and sources or whatever, where here they're getting it from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
And they're getting, in real time, they're getting as much information as we could legally present to them, to let them know what is happening. Because it really, when it comes down to it, and I used to say this when I used to teach in the academy, the biggest part of policing in general, or even working in government, is communication. You know, people want to know what the fuck is going on. Sorry,
Tom, are you telling me that people react too quickly without getting all the information? There's no way that's true.
And you know what? And we live, I mean, that's the world that we live in, right? So we live in this world of instant information.
Yes.
If I go to www.whatsgoingon.com, I should be able to, like, get all the information coming to me. But, you know, as great as that is, you also have to kind of take a step back and say, well, who's giving me this information? And is it factual? Is it reliable? Is it sourced, you know, from someone who is competent, you know, and giving me the real deal, or are they putting some sort of spin on it?
Yep. I think it's the hardest part for the average person.
Kind of a personal agenda. You know what I mean? So you have to, is it coming to me unfiltered, you know, or is it going through a series of filters? And I'm getting maybe 18% of what really took place.
Yeah. Right? I think that's the hardest part for everybody is finding the truth. You know, we just don't know where to go, what's reliable. And now, like, even if it's something true, you got people saying, oh, that's not true. I'm not believing it. Like, it's so, so hard. But Tom, I don't want to take up all your time, so I'm just going to leave you one last question here. You know, I could talk to you for hours, but so now that this has happened, and now that the country's on fire at some points, you know, and you know, both literally and metaphorically, you know, we've had you on a couple times in the past, and you've talked very adamantly about police training and moving into the future and what can be done to kind of educate, you know, and I'm sure a lot of cops are, you know, already there. But what do you think, as far as policing going forward, can happen from this, or is going to possibly change, or how do we start to at least publicly mend the disconnect that's there? What can be changed and what can be altered?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that need to be changed. Right. There's a company that I had been doing some consulting work with for a while called Blue Courage. And if you go to bluecourage.com, you'll see there on their website, they have all kinds of – the training that they do is phenomenal.
Right.
They do a two-day training with primarily with police departments. And they do a three-day training. It's called an inclusive leadership training. And it's kind of like almost like a equity and a diversity, equity and inclusion training that you would get in a private company. They would, you know, they do with private companies and they do it with police departments. I mean, what it really comes down to is that the country needs an enema, right? This you have to remember, this country is still, in many respects, a racist, sexist, homophobic, anti-Semitic, Islamophobic, transgenderphobic, and so on and so on and so on country. That's why we're not a great country. I love this country, you know, and I think it's a really good country compared to a lot of other countries. However, we, you know, this Trump ran on this whole, we got to make America great again. Yeah, well, guess what? 3.5 years later, we still have to make it great again.
Yeah.
Because we haven't gone anywhere. We're going backwards.
Yeah.
And, you know, which is a whole other story, but you know, we have this systemic set of isms that are ingrained and entrenched in this country. Racism is nothing new. It's gone back for 400 years that the country's been in existence. So, you know, I mean, George Washington owned over 100 slaves. He was the first president of the United States. You know what I mean? So it's like, this isn't new stuff that's going on here. And if you were someone who's been oppressed for 300 or 400 plus years, I think by now you'd be pretty fucking pissed off.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? So, and when you say that there are things going on within your community which have been ignored for decades and are still being ignored, particularly under this administration, and now we see it on live TV, you say, well, I don't want to say I told you so, but yeah, I told you so. Mm-hmm. There are 700,000 to 800,000 law enforcement people in the United States. So if our country overall has this systemic problem where we have all been socialized to believe on some level, either from home or from school or from your friends or from TV, certain things about black people or Hispanic people or Jewish people or Islamic people or gay people or transgender people, you know, we've all been socialized and sent messages about these people. And about, because they're different, they're bad in some way, or they shouldn't be treated equally, and so on and so on and so on. So if you have 700,000 or 800,000 law enforcement people, they're a byproduct of our overall culture. So regardless of how much training goes into police training, in a situation like this, where the training clearly has failed, right? This guy went through a police academy, 3, 4, maybe 6 months worth, and in the NYPD, it's a 6-month academy. You're in there for 6 months.
Yep.
And then there's subsequent, you know, retrainings and refreshers after that, like most police departments, if not all police departments. So he went through the training. This guy was on there for quite some time. He wasn't like he just rolled out of there 5 minutes ago. He's been on there for years. So at some point, the training failed. And when the training fails, as it does in some instances and with some people, then what happens is you have to rely on what kind of a person they are. Because in the academy, what you're trying to do is you're trying to re-socialize someone in 6 months after they've had 20 or 25 or 30 or 35 years of all of this.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you're trying to do in 6 months. You're trying to, you know, you're trying to give them like a, you know, a, an upgrade to, you know, Windows 95. Yeah. And, you know, go to at least Windows Millennium, and which was awful.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was worse. That was a downgrade.
That's what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This world is Windows Vista right now.
Windows
so.
Vista, yeah.
But that's what academies try to do. That's what training tries to do. I think the training that's out there now is probably the best it's ever been. So, but clearly, when you have a failure, there has to be a fail safe, and the fail safe is you would hope that through the psychological testing and all this other stuff, background checks and. That you are getting quality people who are doing this because there's something inside of them that says, I want to leave this place in better shape than what I found it.
No.
Yeah.
You know, but clearly this guy, and based on his record, from what we've now learned, he wasn't really that kind of guy, but yet he was able to continue. So that's another failure, right, in the system to pull out these dandelions that eventually, you know, maybe it's nice green grass for a while, but then at some point it becomes a dandelion. So you got to get out.
Yep.
So otherwise it's going to be a problem. And this guy, so it failed. So I'm always a proponent for more training and better training.
Yep.
But unfortunately, because as we've seen, you know, as we saw down in Charlottesville, where the president said there are good people on both sides. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
So groups and neo-Nazis are not really cool guys. They're assholes. You know what I mean? Yeah. And yeah, when you arm yourself with an AK-47 or whatever it is with a semi-automatic rifle that you have, yeah, maybe you are a big tough guy because, listen, you know, if you got a bullet this big and you're threatening me with it, okay, all right, you're a cool guy.
Right, right.
But really doing cool things by terrorizing people that way. So this country, like I said, it needs to be like a full-on colonoscopy, you know, where people just to treat each other respectfully, regardless of who they are, where they came from, what they look like, and then treat them based on how they're being treated by that person. It's just, it's not that hard. I think I'm all that bright of a guy, but the concept is not really that difficult to follow.
Yeah.
And then the police are always going to be held to a higher standard, so they have to take it upon themselves to just be that good person, regardless of whether or not they feel like being the good person, because you're being paid to be the good person. You're being paid to be the good guy, to be the hero of the day.
Yep.
And when you're doing stuff like what this guy did, you're not. And then you have to expect the public to explode in your face, as they should.
Absolutely. Tom, thanks so much for some of your time. I find it some of the most valuable times we've had on this show, and love to get you on in the future. If people want to like follow you or see when you're going to be, I know you've been on, you're on CNN recently, and I'm sure your voice is going to be pretty valuable in these next couple weeks hopefully. Whatever. Hopefully, you will be. I always said you should be in the cabinet. You're the type of person they should talk to. What's the best place for people to follow you or keep updated on your info?
You can catch me on Twitter at Tom Verney, TOMVERNI. I'm actually right now. If you for those people that have done watching binge watching all kinds of shows on Investigation Discovery Channel. They have a new series called Caught on Camera.
Okay.
So the first season had 10 episodes. They're really short. They're like 10 or 15 minutes each. But I'm in most of the episodes in the first season of Caught on Camera on ID Network.
Awesome. Tom, awesome. Stay safe out there, and hopefully people use you as a resource, and we appreciate your time here on the show.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care,
one
Tom.
One of these days we'll have to bring him on when we have pleasant conversations.
Yeah, I know.
Like, the next one you're coming on, we're going to talk about good books and milkshake flavors. I promise.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Who knows when that'll be? But maybe after the murder hornets are done with us.
Ah, you know, the murder hornet. Well, stay safe from those too, Tom. All right.
Yeah.
Pleasure, right, Tom.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Take care, Tom.
All right. I will see you.
The one and only Tom Burney. Yeah.
Big stuff there, man.
It's, yeah, I know. It's like, it's kind of hard for me to be like, let's go back and let me tell you about this crazy person I saw at the store, you know, like, or something that happened to me today. Like, I think, like I said, he proves to me to be like our possibly most valuable guest that keeps coming on, because he touches so many, checks off so many boxes that people should listen to. You know what I mean? Like, you could get the most pro cop guy, the gay guy, the CNN guy, the fake, whatever it is. He seems to really just be a very valuable resource, and I'm glad we have a relationship with him. So
he keeps a pulse on everything that's going on, and I mean, he comes out with logical answers and makes you think. And the good thing is, it makes you hope for a better situation coming up. I know it's hard to fathom that occurring, but with people like that in the world, we got a chance.
Yeah.
It could happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know what, Mike? It's got to happen at some point. Like, you know, it's one way or the other soon enough, because this, like I said, this country's been in a pressure cooker now for the last decade, and just social media don't help, the news don't help. Radio don't help. Like, it's just you got to look for voices out there that are smart and open minded and listen, and you know, and I think Tom is one of those. So
yeah, we're not.
Yeah,
he is.
No, definitely not us. But you know, Berlo, it's, I think on that, I think we'll wrap. You know, I had a couple other things I wanted to talk about, but I think they could be pushed the episode. You know what, Tom Burney just made me, you know, I'm going to do another episode, Berlo. What do you say? 301?
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can end it at 301. I mean, it's like the extra. It's like the lost episode that they do when they end the show. So
right. I guess real quick, 300 episodes, Berlo. You've pretty much been 300 episodes. We don't have to go into exact.
276, I think. Something like that. Yeah, episode 24 was my first. So.
Program's gone through numerous guests, numerous locations, from my old house to a room in my house to laying on the couch with toilet paper holders, holding microphones, then down at my parents' basement for about 5 months, then to my little place, and then you moved away, so different states. And the show keeps going, and like I said, I don't know. Since this pandemic, I felt almost
renaissance.
Yes, like you know, like we've talked to some amazing people. It's just we continue to talk to some amazing people. Whether no one listens or 100,000 people listen, it still seems fun to me. So I plan on being here again on I guess Thursday. But
that sounds like a plan. In all seriousness, it's still an enjoyable thing. Like you said, I mean, even if we're not getting to Rogan levels, I can honestly say to everybody listening, we try to come in here and entertain, and we really do get excited when we talk to these different people, whether it's a celebrity, whether it's like the weird little story that they have, whether We try to make everything as entertaining as possible. We might not always hit it, but you know what? We do care about you. For the people who are listening, we're having a ball. We hope you have a ball. If you got suggestions up, contact us. We'd love to hear from you. You know, we want to keep making it better. I mean, we want the 400th episode to be way better than the 300th episode. Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And like I said, we get just as excited to talk to Butterbean as we do with Tom Verney, as we do with, you know, a hippo attack survivor. Like, we it's not just about big names. It's just about people who are interesting and passionate out there. And we've done some wild things. It's been a wild ride, bro. We've done everything from LARPing. We went LARPing and did an episode there. Just a memory popped up the other day.
We surfed with the Daytona 500 winner.
Yeah, we went on water slides with the Daytona 500 winner. Just a memory popped up the other day on Facebook or Instagram, one of them, about the game show we played for your 40th birthday. And I was on our Google Drive or whatever looking, and I found all the old questions. I'm like, you know, like I kind of forgot about a lot of them. So it's pretty funny. We've talked to open murders in the last couple of weeks. We've talked about that. We've talked to big athletes, champions, and it's been a pretty interesting ride. So I'm open to another 300, brother, is what I'm saying.
I challenge people to give us a subject that we didn't touch.
That's true.
On this episode, any kind of guess and all. I'm almost amused to hear an answer.
Well, it is funny because, like, we'll, you know, me and Mike spend a lot of time trying to get guests. And I talked about it a couple episodes ago. That is, like, part of the enjoyment for us. I know for myself, the hunt is almost as good as doing the interview. It's like, yes, landed this person. Or it, and, like, I guess if there was, as 300 episodes in, we've seen a lot of podcasts of our friends come and go. I guess they ask me all the time, how'd you get them? I'm going, there is no secret to getting them. It is reaching out. But Berla, we have gotten guys through people we know. We've gotten guys through Facebook. We've gotten guys through Instagram. I've gotten guys through Twitter. We've gotten guys through their agents. We've gotten guys through pestering people for for weeks and weeks and months, sometimes years. Howard Berger took me 2 years to get on the show. So I guess my only advice for any other podcasters who want
to to give a weird story. I was just going to say, as a weird story, how I got Joe Jacoby was I contacted his insurance company that he owns to get him
So I guess if there was advice, not that we're in any like position to give advice on massive listenership, but it is, you got to stick with it, man. You got to like get creative and really find ways, especially if you want to talk to some people. And honestly, we've talked to some people I never thought we'd talk to, bucket list people we've had on the show, and it just continues to be a kind of a pretty cool ordeal. We have Mike, as we look forward to the next even like five episodes, we got some really cool guests coming up in the next 2-3 weeks. So keep your ears and eyes peeled for that. But overall, that's really it. We don't have to go into like our greatest guests ever or whatnot. We've done that a bunch, and other than that, what we appreciate most is your listenership, your follows, your shares, and that's really it. Berlo, anything to promote before we or to say before we get on out of here?
Well, I thank everybody for listening, and we'll continue to work hard as for promoting something. I mean, I think the only thing we can do is remind people, if you want to help out with everything that's going on in this world, the George Floyd Memorial Fund, the Minnesota Freedom Fund, the Campaign Zero, these are the places that need the attention. I'll talk about a brewery I love on the next week's episode, yeah. But let's come together as a community, people. But let's get the politics aside. Let's get a solution. I know it's going to be hard. I know some people are going to say, F you. I know what's right and wrong. But it's as we've been saying, we only got one planet, people. I just want to make the movie Space Jail. I don't want actually people living on Space Jail, okay?
Yeah.
Let's try to be good people.
Yeah, if you like our Space Jail pitch, tell us who you think who else could play, who could fit into the our script there. But yeah, Mike's right. I'm not going to promote anything else either. Just do the right thing, guys, and open your ears. I mean, open your ears and shut your mouth. That's like the best thing you can do. Listen, if you like Tom Verney, there's a guy to go follow, and go check out and get some information from. So, guys, that's the end of episode 300, and it was a good one, man. From Butterbean to silly games to really meaningful guests to Space Jail, and that's kind of, we wouldn't have it any other way because that's kind of what we do. It's just a smorgasbord of things, and if we enjoy it, hopefully it comes through. But that's it, guys. Find us on Instagram, find us on Facebook, find us on Twitter. We're on a bunch of different internet radio stations. That's it, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it and keep the wind at your back.
Later.
Up there beyond the sky, it's been a long